Welcome to the Leisureman Midweek Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. We are the Leisureman. Let me set the scene here. One of the TVs isn't working, so we're watching NFL Network's Senior Bowl coverage replay, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny because I think we watched the original together, and it's not getting old, the Senior Bowl.
No, the replay of the Senior Bowl, I'm watching Josh Allen. He looks a little young for me. I think he should have let his little bit of growth, a little stubble.
Yeah.
Baby face.
This is interesting, too, because Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, they're showing a lot of shots. We saw the first half when Baker Mayfield was still there on the sideline, kind of broing out. On the bro scale, these are high up there for quarterbacks, Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, right?
See, bros, I don't know how bro Josh Allen is because we didn't see him in big games. Haven't seen him with his hat on backwards.
Josh Allen out of Wyoming, I feel like there's a lot of bro factors going on.
Is Wyoming a bro school?
I don't know. It's out west.
But it's not like UC Santa Barbara. That's a bro school. UC Davis.
Yeah, I just feel like Wyoming, yeah, you do bro things. You get a truck.
Yeah, you buy. It looks like you think you'd be a truck owner.
Wow, we're gonna do more research on this. Get back to the bro level of Josh Allen.
We got a lot coming up today. We have our most famous segment, probably in the history of the show, the Leisureman Bust Metric, where we took the look at the draftees for the draft at quarterback, and what odds, what score they have towards possibly being a bust someday. Not real positive, kind of a little snarky.
Yeah, but if you have a low score, that means that you're not going to be a bust. So it doesn't have to be negative, Paul. I don't know why your mind always goes that direction.
I'm seeing a story right now. Josh Rosen of UCLA disputes reports that he does not want to play for the Browns. Where did it initially come from if it wasn't from him or his people?
Well, he told Mike Silver of the NFL Network that he said he had no idea where that came from and questioned the whole report.
So someone close to him leaked that he didn't want to play for the Browns, and now this is this a faux retraction or a real retraction?
Well, maybe it was someone close to him who did not have his approval to say that. It's possible.
Right.
I mean, also, by the way, why would he want to play for the Browns?
Yeah, well, it's too bad you can't say that you don't.
I mean, they're the worst team in the league right now. They're a very small market, and you get right behind them. You got the Giants and Jets in New York looking at quarterbacks, possibly.
How bad would it be for Josh Rosen, public perception-wise, if he announced, I will not play for the Browns? Just, I won't. Not that I just don't want to. I won't.
I think it would be an initial hit. But long-term, no one would remember. Eli Manning, does anyone stigmatize him for not wanting to play with the Chargers?
No, you remember it, but you can win your way out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, John Elway's famous for it.
Sure.
Josh Rosen, this is his one chance to not play for the Browns. After this and the next contract, he could avoid them like the plague.
You know how I study mocks pretty much more closely than I'll watch the actual draft?
Watch your children.
Rosen slipping a bit. He might not be the Browns' choice anyway.
Do you think Rosen is slipping because of concussion issues?
Yes.
That's it.
Shoulder, too. His shoulder is a huge concern. Probably shoulder one, concussions two.
By the way, I was looking at Josh Allen stats, the Wyoming gunslinger, and they keep comparing him to like Kyle Bowler and Jamarcus Russell, which is whoever's putting these comps out there is not helping my brother out.
No.
I wonder if there's ever been a quarterback drafted in the top 10 who never had a season over 60% passing in college.
Yes, definitely. I'll bet you there's 10 of them. Back in the day, nobody had 60%.
But like in the past 25 years.
Ooh, okay.
I would like to know because, you know, Kyle Bowler was a terrible high college quarterback percentage passing-wise. He was like a 52% career passer at Cal.
Oh, Jake Locker.
Jake Locker.
He was about 50.
Yeah, and he was more of a runner as well.
Yeah, and actually, they were right to question his completion percentage. The guy couldn't hit anything in the NFL.
All right, we're going to get to a lot of quarterbacks, but I have a hot take here, a scalding hot take. The college hoops scandal that's been going on, if it really starts with Louisville and Patino and that, how it went on a couple months ago, and it's bled into the FBI and the reports of different high school players getting paid by this company, ASG or whatever. And, you know, Sean Miller of Arizona's in the hot seat. There's supposedly a tape of him discussing a $100,000 payment to high school All-American DeAndre Ayton, the big center. Redundant. Here's why this scandal is about to fade into oblivion. There's certain things you need to keep a scandal going. Photographs, audio, video.
Video is big.
Video is huge. If there's a video with audio of Sean Miller discussing it, you can replay that over and over and over and dissect it.
Yeah, I mean, I think video is even bigger. Visual is even bigger than audio, but audio is a nice substitute. And so you're implying that they're not going to get that.
Well, if you go back to, and it's very apples and oranges, the Donald Sterling debacle with the LA Clippers. Once the audio of him came out, game over. It eliminates wiggle room, eliminates vagueness. Also, Sean Miller is a very good young coach. He's not a household name. Rick Pitino's a household name.
Yeah. I totally agree with everything you've said. And I don't think the audio is going to come out. And that's one of many reasons that I think this is going to blow over. But I was shocked. Last Sunday, 6 and 9 Eastern, on the Liegerman Show, you said that this scandal was not going to make a sea change in college basketball. And I was caught up in the moment. And right. I said, you know what? This feels different. And now,
it felt
a couple
big.
Days later.
It feels big still.
It doesn't feel any different, though. I think you're right. I don't think there's going to be a massive transformation of the sport.
No, I can't see it. I think what will happen is agents and these agencies will just not keep any paperwork when they pay these players out of high school. That was the dumb thing. You file an expense report saying, I paid this player, this player, this player. Well, that's going to come back to bite you. The other thing I think is what almost made this gigantic is when you had Duke's name attached to it. Duke and Mike Krzyzewski are by far the biggest whale of college basketball, even bigger than John Calipari. If somehow this went to Duke's door, but it didn't really. It started to, and then you looked at one of their players had a lunch with this agent and will probably have to pay $30 back to charity.
Yeah, no, Duke is in the clear now. Miles Bridges, the big star of Michigan State, kind of in the clear.
But if Duke wasn't in the clear, all the Duke haters, especially in the media, would have come out of the woodwork to keep this story churning.
Duke is by so, you're exactly right, so far and away the number one team to watch in college basketball. They were on against Virginia Tech earlier in the week, and I wouldn't watch Virginia Tech play anybody on earth except Duke. And I think coming into this tournament, this is a really kind of a lame tournament. People have described it, this is a ho-hum field because there's no real number one team. It's like Duke and everybody else.
Duke really is a brand. As far, you know, North Carolina's great, Indiana, Kentucky, name whatever college team you want. Duke is a brand of hatred and love from different fan bases.
I mean, to me, Notre Dame football, Duke basketball, the Yankees, and the Dallas Cowboys.
Right. Nobody hates North Carolina.
No.
Nobody gets upset about them. I mean,
Dukies, but.
Right. But they're as great of a program as anybody. Kentucky, a lot of people have issues with Calipari, but, you know, that he's kind of tier two in college basketball.
Right. Well, it's exactly the same as the Cowboys aren't better than the Steelers, but nobody hates the Steelers. You know, Notre Dame, there's USC's. Got the same history as Notre Dame, but people hate Notre Dame. Well, I don't know if people hate Notre Dame. So you're right. There's some reason that certain teams are, I think it's because they're perceived to have an advantage that people turn against them.
Notre Dame has been like a B program for the past 25 years, and that's why they're not hated as much. Once they had the Manti Te'o thing and they were in the national title game and they got waxed by Alabama, people were cheering Alabama waxing Notre Dame because they hate Notre Dame so historically.
Absolutely. Notre Dame is such a big national team. That, I think that's the common thing. These are teams that transcend their region and are completely national.
When you were a kid, you were a Duke hater, weren't you?
A huge Duke hater because my uncle's family is from Chapel Hill, so I was a North Carolina fan. Also, I was fell right into the trick. I hated Leitner. I thought he was a bully and a cheater. I thought Hurley was overrated by the press because he was white. I'll be totally honest. I'm like, there's a bunch of other guards who are doing the same thing.
Yeah, get in
line. It's all about Hurley. Then Hurley would kill you at the end of the game. I'm not going to lie about that.
Well, he got more coverage because of his novelty, the novelness of him being a dominant college point guard being white.
Yeah, but also Duke's attitude at the time was, and I think you liked it, was very much like, come beat us. They were obnoxious. They were arrogant. They were kind of funny. But they were easy to root against, and that made basketball so much fun.
It was weird because I liked Duke and I liked Leitner. I loved his snarky style, but I also really enjoyed Chris Webber. The rest of the Fab Five, not as much. Webber was by far the alpha dog there.
Oh, I was a huge Chris Webber fan. I mean, that was you're talking about my heyday of college basketball fandom right around there. I also liked, I had all these weird teams like Cal with Lamon Murray and then Jason Kidd.
Yes.
You know, and then there was the guys you only saw at a certain time of year, Clarence Weatherspoon and Fennis Dembo.
Yeah.
Guys are like these small schools who you, conference tournament, it was such a big, I mean, college basketball's changed. Remember when we were younger, conference tournaments into the tournament, we knew these teams back and forth.
When I first got to New York City, I think it was like 1996, I was working at CBS Sports and my boss goes, hey, do you want a credential so you can go to the Big East tournament? I was like,
oh, the Big East tournament was huge.
My boss, Howie Denneroff, great guy over at CBS and Westwood, goes, do you want to go to the Big East tournament? He goes, you don't even really have to work. I may have you do a little stuff here and there, but you've had a good year. And he just gave me a credential so I could go to all the games. I went by myself, you know, and I just found people and hung out. It was like, you know, Ray Allen and you know, it was the days of Ray Allen and Iverson.
Wow.
And, I mean, the Big East tournament was kind of the last call for how big it was. And then 5-7 years later, it was kind of got dismantled, but the Big East was just appointment viewing.
That was the best tournament. Now it's funny because all the tournaments are in New York. I saw the ACC in Brooklyn last year, Big Ten's in New York. So they all took part of that, but that was by far the biggest conference tourney. I used to love the small ones, too. I still do enjoy them, by the way. There's a lot of drama, even though I have no idea who I'm watching.
It's fun because the action's fast and furious, but you know, the power of college basketball, this is going to sound like one of those back in my day.
Sure.
But back in the 80s, college basketball, to me, before Jordan really pushed it, it was even with the NBA and possibly bigger, at least where I came from. Like, I didn't have a Bulls jacket. I had a Georgetown jacket. I lived in Chicago. I mean, I bought a Georgetown hat, a Georgetown jacket, because I thought they were so damn cool. And Houston with Olajuwon, I think the peak of college basketball is like 79 through 87.
Yeah.
And it's never going to be bigger.
The absolute apex is Patrick Ewing's Georgetown. Right in there.
Ralph
Sampson. Right after Akeem and Clyde Drexler and Phi Slamma Jamma. I'm a little Philly biased. When Villanova beat Georgetown, that was so huge.
But it was a gigantic story. And if it happened now, let's say, remember a couple years ago, Butler almost beat Duke?
Yeah.
That would have been big. That would have been a throwback to the colossal upsets of our childhood.
Yeah. Now most people can't even tell you who played in last year's final game.
Don't ask me because I'm going to have trouble remembering.
I think we were there. I don't even know. They all meld into each other now.
Now, you have something hot off the presses,
yes.
NFL rule changes.
Yes. Do we have a hot off the presser sounder? Like,
dun, 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 dun.
Okay. I'm not sure there are two dudes in all of America who like potential NFL rule changes more than you and me.
Not actual, potential.
Yes. Oh, actual rule changes? Okay. So I'm going to sort of go in reverse order of importance just to get the lead up to the big one. All right. Let's start with... The NFL is looking at more ejections for fighting, and they're also considering possibly a targeting rule.
I like the first one because there's nothing dumber than an NFL fight.
Sure.
Millionaires who could be out for 6 weeks with a broken finger punching each other in the helmet. It's the dumbest sport for fighting because the fights never do anything because you got a bare hand hitting generally a helmet or a face mask. And if you rip the guy's helmet off, you're in even bigger trouble. So, yeah, if they could curtail fighting, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, who cares? That's why I put it lower.
Targeting. Now, would targeting be like college where if you got called for targeting, you miss the second half like a red card or miss the next game?
I don't have any details, but I assume they're going to go to video and they might kick a player out during the game instead of after the game.
Well, as long as they have the same rule as college football where you get called for targeting and then they run it upstairs and they replay it in the moment and they can rescind it because— I watch a lot of college football, and there's a lot of times where a guy gets called for targeting in the moment because it's such a bang-bang play. Mm-hmm. Then they run it upstairs, and they say, well, no, because his head actually hit his shoulder. He didn't seem to have the intent. And I think college football has done a pretty good job with it because the refs, they get one look at it going 25 miles an hour, and then upstairs, that's a mandatory replay. It has to be replayed on targeting.
That's such a huge penalty in college. I don't think it's perfect. Far from it.
No.
But I don't mind that direction. Okay, they are going to have a new rule where you can hire a coach who is in the playoffs. Now, do you know during the playoffs when they're doing coaching searches, they always have to wait for the Super Bowl team. They're going to eliminate that rule so you can interview a guy who's, say, in the conference title game.
You could already interview him. You just can't hire him, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I like it, by the way. And you can only interview him certain times.
How does that help or hurt?
Well, here's why. This is big. Because you want to hire the assistants on the Super Bowl teams. Those are presumably the four best assistants.
Mm-hmm.
So every year it gets screwed up and teams have to jump on a guy before. That's why Seattle kept their coaching staff together for so long because everyone wanted these guys, but they didn't want to wait. So I think this is a small rule.
Yeah, I don't think this bothers anybody.
Yeah, okay. I'm working it up. They want to call more illegal contact to try to limit the amount of hand fighting on passes. Help offense. I am all for it. I thought... Cornerbacks no longer even try to avoid contact. They just mug the receiver, and the receiver mugs right back. They got to clean it up.
Yeah, there's really great defensive backs who know how to mug a receiver and the timing of it. You have to push off and control the pushing while the ball is kind of up in the air and not at the end because the ref starts looking when the ball is getting there. If you time your manhandling of a wide receiver or your push off, like a real veteran would do,
like
you can get away.
Akib Talib.
Yeah,
where
you push low on the hip or away from the ref. I'll bet you defensive backs are aware where the ref is and know, I'm going to give him a little push with my left hand because the ref's on my right side. Or I see Rob Gronkowski. He's an unbelievable push-off guy.
Yeah.
And he does it every time. But what he does is he does it early in the play to gain a little room, almost like You know when a center gets down on the low blocks and they push out and then establish their spot? That's the Gronk move.
Except in the Super Bowl where the officials swallow their whistles, Gronk just threw his guy to the ground every play and had like 8 catches in a row.
Okay, so but
these because, and they should have been called. There were no doubt in my mind that Gronk should have been called.
You always complain to me that you can call defensive interference and pushing off every, on every single play. Will this cause more calls?
Yeah, well, they want to help the offense here. They were worried that there was a slight dip this year. Okay, the two big ones. I think you're going to like this. Mm-hmm. The competition committee is discussing the possibility of limiting defensive pass interference to at most 15 yards, which is the college rule.
Right.
No long PI calls. Before you weigh in, I love it. I hate nothing more than a 50-yard penalty.
Right. Man, but does this exacerbate the, I got burned, I'm just going to grab your jersey, like a breakaway, like almost like an intentional foul in basketball and a guy gets a breakaway, they just grab him?
But you're assuming that the quarterback's going to be able to hit him. It's not that easy. How many plays a game, or is it that clear that the guy's going to break away?
Yeah, it's probably one call a game.
Yeah, I like it. I saw so many drives that were just defensive pass interference. It's become way too big a penalty.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last one. The competition committee is looking at potentially eliminating going to the ground portion of the catch rule.
Okay. What is the going to the ground portion of the catch rule?
You have to control the ball all the way to the ground. So you're catching the ball and you're diving forward and you hit the ground. The way it is now, you have to go to the ground and keep the ball secure the whole time.
I love it so far because let's say I'm a wide receiver and I catch the ball and I go 1, 2, 3 and I go to the ground and then I lose the ball. It's a fumble now instead of an incompletion, right?
Right. So it's Wild West.
It is Wild West, but it actually rewards the defense for, let's say, I catch the ball, bang, bang, and pop the ball out, or it's being wrestled as the ground.
Right. The reason the rule existed was to avoid the safeties going for headshots to try and wrestle that ball loose.
I love it.
So you're going to have some more violent hits.
But it takes away. I mean, you saw that play in the Super Bowl. Was it Rudolph who caught the ball? The tight end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz had that one where he went 1, 2, 3, and had 3 steps in and went to the ground by the goal line. And we were all sitting in the stands. Yeah. We were surrounded by Eagles fans. They're like, oh, no. Yeah. We're going to get screwed on this call going to the ground, surviving the ground.
Yeah, I think the Jesse James, the Steelers tight end, that embarrassed the NFL.
Yeah.
Jesse James scored what could have been a go-ahead touchdown against the Patriots. And the announcers had no idea that this was going to be a call. A lot of the audience did, but Romo didn't figure it out.
Right, because he took 3 steps and then cracked the plane. The game should be over. The play should be over right there. Yeah, and they took a lot of heat for the phrase surviving the ground.
Yeah.
When that was unveiled that day, where Al Riveron?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a phrase that 4 months ago no one's heard of, and now any football fan is like, I use that as jokes, like, you know, around, like if you and I were playing and our kids were goofing around and one of our kids fell, we may say to each other, oh, little Sally didn't have survived the ground.
Yeah, it became like sort of the symbolic phrase for how crazy the NFL has gotten. Now, here's my fear. The NFL tends to add words to their rules. Mm-hmm. So there's always the other side. For example, the going to the ground rule. What's going to happen is there's going to be a huge play in a playoff game. Guy's going to go over the middle, have the ball, boom, 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 hit the ground. The ball's going to come loose. What would have been an incomplete pass is a fumble. And then we're going to be like, wait, he didn't catch that ball.
Right. Or what's going to happen is the first couple times it happens, no one's going to scramble for that fumble. Mm-hmm. You're going to see a defensive player just stand there going, you know, like dancing because I made a good hit. Or the offensive player think it's an incompletion. I think this might make the ref's job easier.
No, okay. One thing that I would like, and I don't think they can do it, I ranted about flags on punts and kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more, if there is a fair catch, I've seen more fair catch punts where there's a holding on one side of the ball. Who cares? It was a fair catch. Why are you throwing a flag? It's so annoying.
Yeah, and also blocking in the back on a kick. Where else are you supposed to block the guy?
Can't they just ease up? Just let it go. Who cares? I know it's a safety rule.
No flags on kicks. How about it just a rule?
Yeah, but it'll become the Wild Wild West. All right, so we're generally okay with where the NFL is going.
Okay, now what about the out-of-bounds play? Will this be the same thing? Let's say I catch the ball and I get 2 feet in, and then I go out of bounds and I lose the ball. Is that a catch? Because I had 2 feet in, which is a catch, and then I've gone out of bounds, and nothing happens after being out of bounds should factor.
Well,
But I didn't go to the ground.
So the out of bounds is similar to the ground. So you did have, in the past, you had to survive the out of bounds.
Or even survive the process of the catch.
So, but I don't understand. If you have the ball in your hand, why are you losing the ball once you're out of bounds?
For whatever reason. Look at Santonio Holmes. You know, Santonio, well, he hit the ground. But let's say I'm falling out of bounds, and I go one, two, three, and then I go out of bounds.
Then
and
you the just
ball,
fling it?
And the ball, well, the ball kind of flies out or comes loose.
But why did it fly out?
Doesn't matter. I'm already out of bounds. Shouldn't matter.
Oh, man. First of all, I'm so glad that there's still going to be catch controversy. I don't know what I would talk about on Sunday otherwise.
Do you think, now, who did the NFL give this information to? About
I got Judy Batista for the NFL Network, Mark Maskey for Washington Post, longtime NFL reporter.
Old school.
Yeah, I don't know how exactly the information got out there.
Do you think the NFL is doing trial balloon to see our reaction to this?
Sure, absolutely. I think that I think the owners vote in March or something, and it takes a while to get this stuff through.
As long as they lean towards calling more things a catch than not, like that's their new policy, like I think they're going to have the fans on their side.
Yeah, I also think that this thing about hand fighting, that's the entire, to me, the entire NFL comes down to how do you call pass interference. In 2005, when Peyton Manning and Tom Brady argued, or somebody, oh no, it's Bill Polian and the Colts said that the Patriots are mugging us. You got to start calling that. All of a sudden, everybody started having 50 touchdowns in a season.
I'm telling you, I've seen it a few times. If I was an NFL team, I would have a designated get interfered with play. Mm-hmm. Tell your receiver to run like a 30-yard streak, and I'm going to jump ball it and throw it low, and you just stop and let yourself get run over. And because of, you know, you're 30 yards downfield, you get all 30 yards. Now with this 15-yard penalty, it's less impactful.
You know,
less impactful to the defense.
I always worry, too, on a Hail Mary when I'm rooting for one team, or even worse, I bet on one team, that there's going to be a PI on a Hail Mary, which they never do, but they probably could do that if they wanted to.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, if you saw Gronk in the Super Bowl, he had four guys holding his shoulders down when he's trying to jump.
I know. Oh, what if they had thrown a flag there?
Can you imagine? Like, the refs must just they must say to each other, look, just swallow them. Just don't. We don't want to be the story of this. All right, next topic. We created the bust metric, the quarterback draftee bust metric. We did it last week. We did Josh Rosen. And both of us, what we do is we take on-field, off-field, and wild card. And from 1 to 10, what red flags are there on the field, off the field, and wild card, whatever topic you want, that could make him a possible bust someday? Like, we want to see it coming now. So last week, Josh Rosen, on the field, pretty good player. We both agreed that he showed a lot. Classic drop back, big arm. Off the field, I had a big issue. We both had a big issue with the concussion issues, love for the game rumors.
Yeah, there was a quote about playing for money.
So we added up, and each of us had him around 10 to 12 points out of a possible 30. Anything over 10, you're getting a little nervous. Anything under 10, you're kind of like not in that bust range.
Right, and I think it's rare to have a quarterback under 10. Let's just say that there's not a lot of Andrew Lucks out there.
Right. At the time, Andrew Luck looked spotless. All right. Sam Darnold, the USC quarterback, he's going to the combine. He said he wouldn't throw. Does not throwing at the combine bother you in any way?
That does not add a point anywhere for me. I care less.
Do you think a lot of media people are being faux concerned about him not throwing
at the combine? Seeing a mix. I'm seeing some people who say, you know what? It's not that big
Andrew Luck didn't throw at the combine.
Yeah. It used to be like about 6 years ago, people were not throwing at the combine. Then the last few years, it's been a thing. Doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Is it fair to say, before we get to bust metric, that Sam Darnold is the likely first quarterback taken right now? If you're betting.
Yeah, I like Darnold number one. I think Darnold goes number one right now, but it's a very thin margin.
Okay, Sam Darnold, USC quarterback, on-field bust metric. I'm going to go first. I'm going to give him about a 2. Sometimes he scrambles a little quick for me. He doesn't stay in the pocket and do like little back-and-forth moves a la Tom Brady and guys like that. Now, the big plus is he's good with the pass rush as far as creating plays, throwing on the run. I wouldn't call him a runner. I consider him a play extender. Ooh,
yeah.
Play extender.
And for a big guy, he runs unbelievably well.
Rim protector. Do we create a phrase, play extender, instead of scrambler?
I like it. Russell Wilson being the ultimate guy.
Play extender.
He's incredibly
athletic. So I'm only going to go 2 points for Sam Darnold on-field issues.
I'm going to go 4.
What are they?
Okay. Well, let's just look at the numbers. He went... He got worse. There's no doubt. His numbers, he went from a completion percentage of 67 in 2016, 63 last year, 31-9 TD interceptions last year, 26-13 this year. That's a red flag. You know, he stepped out. Had a terrible bowl game against Ohio State. That's a huge red flag on the biggest stage.
What about his style of quarterback? Does that bother you?
Yeah, so I didn't think that he was a great pocket quarterback, kind of like you said.
Yeah.
I thought he was an incredible playmaker. I thought he was just could make something out of nothing. So I definitely like he's not like necessarily if you have great weapons on your team, I think Josh Rosen's your guy, not Sam Darnold.
So I have two, you have four so far. Off the field issues for Sam Darnold. I don't know much about him. He seems a little nerdy, which to me is a plus. He said he wants to play for the Browns, so he's a good liar. I heard his family comes from a family of athletes, so he's got athletic background, which I just don't know anything bad. So I got to give him a zero right now for off-field issues.
I got a total zero. I have no idea.
Right. He's not boring, is he?
That's good, though.
Yeah, I think like boring's good.
But what if we found out that like he's secretly like a player or something, or just like he's like the wildest guy. Like, watch out for Sam Darnold. Here he comes on a Friday night. He's gonna tear up the club.
Don't let him loose in Southeast.
I don't think
so. Right now, zeros for Sam Darnold off the field. He's boring, and we like it. Wild card. All right, stay with me on this one. Sam Darnold, after his first year at USC, remember the playoff game against Penn State, where he just brought them back and just kept going down the field and lighting up Penn State?
Yeah, yeah.
And he did it all with this kind of casual look on his face. And everyone just said, if Sam Darnold were available today, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. He got too hot, and he's never really cooled off. So we don't know if he's worthy of the number one overall draft pick. He was so freaking hot after his first year at USC. That hotness has stayed with him.
Really?
And he didn't
you don't think he's cooled off to some extent?
He has cooled off, but he hasn't had issues where, like, trouble, bad interviews.
Like Jameis Winston yelling at a coach or something when he was struggling his sophomore year.
And Jameis Winston, his sophomore year, started taking a lot of risky plays that didn't work out. You know, I wouldn't say Sam Darnold does that. But I think that Sam Darnold's hotness can put him ahead of where he maybe should be drafted. To me, I think with what I've seen with him, he should be like a middle first-round quarterback. I don't think he's worthy of the first pick.
Okay.
So I think his hotness, I'm going to give him 4 points wild card. He's too hot, and that makes him that puts him into the area where he's drafted higher than he should be, which makes more likelihood of bustness.
Okay. This might have been on the field, but fumbles. I've read multiple times that he's a big fumbler.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to high school. I saw Mike Mayock talking about his fumbling. Now, is that an on-the-field thing, or is that...
It's a wild card.
It's a wild card because, like, does he know how precious the football is?
Does he know?
Yeah.
His football awareness, you're concerned
about?
Yeah,
because once a guy gets the fumbles, Paulie, we know what can happen.
Tiki Barber, it took him a while to clean it up.
Yeah, so I'm going to say fumbles a little bit. Another wild card is, you know, he's just never grabbed me personality-wise.
Right.
Like, yes, he's super calm and cool and collected. I just feel like he's a USC quarterback. I should know a little bit more about him.
Right. We've had him on the Dan Patrick Show, and he didn't give you much.
He was super nice.
Yeah.
But he's Californian. That's probably a plus, but in our world, that's a minus. So I'm going to give him a 3 in the wild card.
So he's probably got great manners.
Oh, he seems like a very polite young man. By the way, what do you think of his look? Do you like his hair and all that going on? It's kind of a big,
he's got
a poofy hair
he
thing.
He does have a big head. I mean, he looks
like a huge head.
Right, which I think, you know, they always say in movies, the bigger the head, the bigger the star. Remember Turtle and Entourage said that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't really look, you know, he kind of looks like a character, like he's the best friend in a high school movie, like the comic relief.
Right, so he's kind of like, what's that actor's name?
He looks like the guy from Workaholics, Adam Devine.
He kind of looks like Adam Devine's athletic older brother.
Yes, like he's like, yeah, he's going to have a lot of one-liners in this rom-com high school movie.
He looks like he drinks beer well, but we don't know that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never heard of him drinking beer. He definitely has an interesting look. See, like, he doesn't have that Mark Sanchez look or the surefire, like, Christian Hackenberg clean cut. And I don't know if that's a plus or a minus.
Well, good looks get you overrated at the draft. So he doesn't have classic quarterback looks.
Yeah, but then you hear, remember Daniel Jeremiah told us there was such a thing as face scouting?
Right.
And that there's a general belief that people follow good-looking people. So you want a good-looking quarterback? Yeah, look, Brady, Rodgers.
Right.
I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Who's better looking, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold?
Ooh.
That's a toughie. I think they're both like B-minuses. There's nothing wrong with them. There's just nothing that screams Hollywood.
You know, but they might develop their looks. You know, what was Aaron Rodgers, a Cal? He was okay, but I never said he's handsome.
Speaking of red flags, Josh Allen looks too young out of Wyoming. I thought he'd have more of like a rugged, you know, Mountain West beard.
Right, but he'll grow into that. You know, he could become a good looking.
I'll bet you he doesn't shave. I'll put $20 on it that he doesn't shave.
You know who's, by the way, we're not going to get at him, but Mason Rudolph's hair game, not good. There's definitely, and So, okay. So I'm going to give him a 3 in wild card.
Okay. So 3 in wild card.
We're getting loose.
Sam Darnold bust metric. I'll give him 2 points on field, 0 points off field, and 4 points wild card because he's too hot and he's going to be drafted a little too high. That's a total of 6. That's a real safe pick.
Okay. I have 4 on the field because of the regression, bad bowl game. He has a lot of interceptions. And then I'm going to give him 0 on the off field. And then I'm going to give him a 3 on the wild card. Mostly it's sort of a hair style thing.
7?
Yeah, so I got a 7.
So we're saying he's a really safe pick.
He's pretty safe.
Where does going to the Browns factor in the chance of him being a bust?
Oh, that should have been part of wild card.
Yes, because by being a Brown quarterback, your odds of being a bust have been tripled?
Let's not even take the Browns. Like, you're going to the worst team in the league,
right?
Number one pick, that stuff. But you know what? I'm not going to count that against him. He's a good fit for the Browns because the Browns need somebody who can run around and make plays, right? Because they don't have a great offensive line.
Right.
So I feel like that's a good fit.
Man. Any chance he's not going to the Browns?
Yeah.
What percentage?
60?
Really?
I mean, he's not. Are you seeing number one in a lot of mock drafts?
If I were the Browns, I would trade that pick down and get one of the other quarterbacks of the top 4.
The latest scuttlebutt is that they might go Barkley number 1 and maybe take a quarterback at 4. They like Josh Allen. That's been out there a lot. I mean, Darnold probably would, but it's been I'm just following the mock drafts. Who knows what the reality is, but it's all over the place.
Man. All right, next topic. My wife sent me a note the other day, and as leisuremen, we talk about vacations and so forth. She goes, what do you want to do for spring break? And I was like, what Panama City Beach? What are we talking about here? And because our kids have spring break. We have kids now. What are you doing for spring break? Last spring break, my wife and I took a brewery tour of Vermont for a couple of days. For
Very
ourselves.
Nice.
Like 4 days, going to breweries, like wine places, liquor places. You know, kind of not debauchery, but it was like an adult spring break. There was a lot of drinking involved, but not nobody passed out, nobody ended up in a gutter that I know of. So. How would you describe Pearl's spring breaks in college, and I'll describe mine?
Oh, dude, it's such a disappointment. There are many things that I've done in my life. I've never done the classic movie college spring break.
Not once. What did you do on spring break? Work on your low post skills?
I went to Philly and hung out with my friends. Oh, see, first of all, we had trimesters, so our spring break was different than everybody. I don't remember ever doing anything.
Not one.
No, because look at my body. Am I a spring break guy? I was too pale. I didn't think I'd fit in Daytona Beach.
You seem like a guy who on spring break would hit some museums, you know, like stop by a few museums.
Yeah, I got nothing for you. Now, what did you do, Paul?
Well, first spring break I went on, one of my buddies worked at Disney the previous summer as an internship. So he goes, hey, if we want to go down to Disney, I got a free place for us to stay. I'm like, Disney?
We're That's
like,
lamer than what I've done.
It in theory, it was. I was like, what are we doing here? He goes, well, it's free. We didn't have any money, so we're like, we got a free townhouse to stay in Orlando, which is not near a beach at all. Now, while it sounds awful, we end up hanging out with a bunch of European girls for like 5 days or six days.
All right. This is not bragging about something that happened
I'm
when
just
you were
saying,
19 years old.
Going to Orlando was pretty lame, but it wasn't so bad. Then I went to Panama City Beach, which is pretty low rent.
That's a classic.
Because it's not even that warm enough to really spend time on the beach and get any sun. It was like the high of 68 every day and the low of like 47 at night. I remember being chilly, but it was pure debauchery. It was drinking from morning to noon to night and so forth. There was nothing else to do but go to the beach and drink, hang out at your hotel and drink, or go to the clubs in Panama City Beach.
Yeah. Wait, oh, Panama City Beach is different than Padre Island?
Yeah, South Padre Island is in Texas by Mexico.
Okay. Where is Panama City Beach,
It's on
Florida?
The Gulf, the high Gulf area out near of North Florida, so
Got
it's
it.
Not even that warm.
Wow. Okay, see, that's what I was hoping, that you did something like that.
I do have
You did it for both of us.
I do have a picture of me standing in my underwear on our balcony of our hotel, probably third floor, and, you know, easily could have been a casualty.
So you had 4 years of college, at least. So
five.
What about the other years?
I went to a few other places.
You might have been overseas at one. Did you travel during college, or was that after college?
I traveled a bit during college. But, yeah, I did one monstrous spring break. I had a couple of buddies. Here's my favorite spring break story. So these two guys I know, I'm not giving out any names, but they they studied aviation in college, let's say. And a bunch of guys were going to Key West, Florida, I think, for spring break. They're going to live it up in one of the Keys. These two guys went to their local college and took the transponder out of a plane, flew it to Key West for a week because everyone's on spring break, so the airport was closed. The transponder tracks a plane.
Sure.
They took it out, left it there. It looks like a little, little small, half size of a car.
Sounds highly illegal.
These guys stole a plane.
Yep.
Put two other guys in it in a case of Natty Light and flew it all the way down to the Keys for a week, lived it up, flew it back, never got caught.
What's the statute of limitations?
I don't know. I'm not sure their names or what school they went to, but that's a good move for spring break.
That's not bad. Now I feel lame, dude. Now you've kind of ruined my experience here.
I hate to tell you, I think it's too late for you to make up this one. You know,
yeah,
you can't go cruising spring break at our advanced age.
So I was funny before the podcast was asking, do we even get spring break this year? I'm not even sure.
My kids have spring break. I think I'm gonna go.
Did we just have a break?
I don't know.
Are we on the same schedule? My kids just had a week off. I think we might have had our spring break.
Really? I have no idea.
New York City and Boston schools were just off for a week.
But it's winter.
Yeah, I know. Maybe that was winter break. So what are we doing this year? Let's think of something fun.
Spring break? Adult spring break?
Yeah.
Let's live it up. If you got any ideas, send it to us at the Leisureman on Twitter, what us Leisuremen should do for spring break, what you did. Try to keep it clean. All right. Anything else to go over today, Pearl?
Man, it's time to really just dive in, really dive into the draft right now. Combine week. Then we're going to have pro days.
Can't wait.
We're going to be all over it.
Last thing before we wrap, you got a compliment as we walked in from one of the security guys about your new hat, your Timberwolves hat.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a second NBA bandwagon. I'm a Sixers fan. I'm a Bucks fan.
That hat cost $50?
No, it was like $35. There's one of these. So the new trend in hats is sort of big. You want to go big.
And there's like metal on your hat.
Yeah, yeah. This hat is no joke. And now, you know what?
You look like you're in the Rhythm Nation video with Janet Jackson.
So me and my fellow Timberwolves fans are kind of happy. This is going to sound weird. I'm not sad that Jimmy Butler's hurt because I want to see that team build around Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. It's time for the young guys to step up. So I am officially a T-Wolves fan.
By the way, side note, the Pleasure Principle video with Janet Jackson, she doesn't get any better than that. Oh, did I have a crush.
Yeah, we might want to get out of here.
Time to wrap it up. We're the Leisureman. Thanks for listening.